from deep inside your radio.
Well, you've probably heard about this, but I don't know if you've heard about this or if you know all the wonderful details of this. Hey, it's the tax break for the Hummer, the vehicle. You've heard about that, ladies and gentlemen, I'm sure. Allow me to introduce you to a fabulous opportunity, writes Chris Thorpe, a sales representative of Hummer of Alaska. You know, Hummers in Alaska make a little sense, don't they? Don't they? A tax loophole so big you could drive a Hummer H2 through it, Chris writes. Imagine being able to purchase the number one large luxury SUV in America today and receive a deduction for the entire purchase amount from your taxes this year! Exclamation point. Chris enthuses. How is this possible? He inquires. Thanks to the book, I'm reading Chris Thorpe's letter to a potential Hummer customer. Quote, thanks to the Bush administration's recent economic stimulus package, small businesses and the self-employed are eligible to deduct the entire purchase cost of new equipment up to $100,000 the year of the purchase. Unquote. Aren't these provisions supposed to help farmers and small business owners buy equipment to transport merchandise and haul equipment? Quote, the Hummer H2 qualifies for this IRS Section 179 deduction by its gross vehicle weight of over 6,000 pounds. Cars and medium-sized SUVs don't qualify for this deduction, Chris taunts. If you are seriously considering acquisition of a new vehicle, he continues, step up to the vehicle that can take you where you want to be, financially and otherwise. Unquote. Since the letter went out in August, Thorpe estimates his Anchorage dealership has sold an additional 35 Hummers at $62,000 each. He sold perhaps 9 in 1 month to doctors who bought them for the tax benefits. They're mostly, according to locals who spoke to the Washington Post, they're mostly leaving them in the garage or their wives are driving them around. Lawyers and small business owners have snapped up the cars. They get 10 miles a gallon. Not only in Alaska, a Hummer salesman told the Palm Beach Post recently, in Florida, when people are deciding what they're going to take, speaking of vehicles, they go for the Hummer for the tax write-off. So, a connection between Arnold and the Bush administration that nobody, as far as I know, in the campaign has brought up so far. But hey, there's still a week to go. Hello, welcome to the show.
Don't force it, let it happen naturally. It will surely happen.
From the edge of America, from the home of the homeless, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to another edition of the show from the Le Show Dome. Yes, indeed, back where there's no parking, because it feels so good. Ladies and gentlemen, there's a lot to chew on. The bubble is getting pierced. News from outside the bubble is slowly leaking in, although still very little attention being paid to the story that has captivated Great Britain, our ally, don't you know, in the war all this summer. The Hutton inquiry into, it's broadened into the British government's defense of, in advance of the war in Iraq. The dossier published about a year ago in which the British government laid out the state of the threat, you see. And this week, the inquiry has now ended after 11 weeks. There'll be a decision. Stand by. But in addition to the testimony, which has been interesting enough if you've been able to have access to the coverage, I not heard in your area, the other thing that's been interesting is there's been a big data dump in which a lot of documents have been made public in the hope, I guess, that people wouldn't read them. And so it is that this week, the big controversy in Britain, to bring you up to speed in case you haven't been, is that the BBC aired a report in May alleging, quoting a source, alleging that the government, quote, sexed up, unquote, the dossier against the wishes of the intelligence community to make Saddam Hussein appear to be more of a threat, to juice up, sex up the deal. And the Tony Blair government reacted with the highest of dudgeon. And that's what the controversy's been about. Unlike here, where, of course, you know, nobody would do something like that. This week, among the documents dumped and made public, Tony Blair's chief of staff sending an email to the head of the Joint Intelligence Committee, which propounded the dossier, which put its name on the dossier, which, quote, owned the dossier, sending him an email the day after the deadline for comments on the dossier had expired, saying, in effect, can't we make this appear more that Saddam Hussein is an offensive threat? Because the existing state of the dossier, the existing language made it appear that he was prepared to use chemical and biological weapons only if attacked. Hey, that's, in my book, that's sexing up. How about you? Got me hot. Dateline Washington, President Bush and Secretary of State Colin Powell defended this week a statement made by Powell early in 2001 that Saddam Hussein did not have, quote, any significant capability with respect to weapons of mass destruction, unquote. The remark was discovered on the State Department's website. There's some webmaster is going to be out in the cold. Tell you that. You digitized what? Bush asked about how Hussein went from that status in February to becoming what he called a great and gathering danger a year and a half later, said his perspective was changed by 9/11. Powell offered a different explanation, saying more information was obtained later. Really? Interesting. Since the leaders of the House Intelligence Committee have criticized the U.S. intelligence community for using largely outdated circumstantial and fragmentary information with too many uncertainties to conclude that Iraq had weapons of mass destruction. Would that be the information Powell got later? Top members of the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence. Well, these guys, you know, they fly off the handle at a moment's notice, don't they? Aren't they security cleared? Yes, they are. They spent 4 months combing through 19 volumes of classified material used by the Bush administration to make its case for war, found significant deficiencies in the intelligence community's ability to collect fresh intelligence on Iraq, and said it had to rely on past assessments dating to when UN inspectors left Iraq in 1998 and some new piecemeal intelligence. The absence of proof that chemical and biological weapons and their related programs had been destroyed was considered proof they continue to exist, said the two top members of the Intelligence Committee. The committee is controlled by Republicans. Its chairman, Representative Porter Goss, is a former CIA agent. The CIA disputed the conclusion and accused the panel of not conducting a detailed inquiry. 4 months? 19 volumes? Good point. The committee's letter said the buildup to the war in Iraq amounted to a case study of the CIA's and other agencies' inability to gather credible intelligence from informants in Iraq or to employ technologies to detect weapons programs. This week, as you probably know by now, David Kaye, who was sent over there by us to find those WMDs, was reported by government sources to be ready to issue an interim report saying that he has found, well, you see, the operative word here would be that he's found, he's found nothing is how you. Now, David Kaye is not just any guy that we sent over there. He was a guy, former UN weapons inspector under the UNSCOM regime, who was sitting on MSNBC. Yeah, I was one of the 500,000 people who saw him sitting on MSNBC all during the run-up to the war and during the war, yakking about how inept the UN was, the UN weapons inspectors, Hans Blix, the Hans Blix operation, for not being able to. Anybody can find this stuff. We know where it is, David Kaye said. And now? Now we, it's, what do you call it? Nothing is what we found. From Time Magazine this week, apropos of the nutty scenario first floated here in mid-April. Over the past 3 months, Time has interviewed Iraqi weapons scientists, middlemen, and former government officials. Saddam's henchmen all make essentially the same claim, that Iraq's once massive unconventional weapons program was destroyed or dismantled in the 1990s and never rebuilt, that officials or destroyed or never kept the documents that would prove it, that the shell games Saddam played with UN inspectors were designed to conceal his progress on conventional weapon systems, not biological or chemical, and Saddam may not have known what he actually had or didn't have. These tales are tempting to dismiss as scripts recited by practiced liars who'd been deceiving the world community for years. These sources may still be too frightened of the possibility of Saddam's return to power to tell his secrets, or it could be that Saddam reconstituted an illicit weapons program with such secrecy that those who knew of past efforts were left out of the loop. But the uncertainty of these sources' accounts can't be easily dismissed, says Time Magazine. That would be the new intelligence Colin Powell had to change his view. Ladies and gentlemen, but that's the question I'm asking you. And I'm hearing, what am I hearing? I'm hearing the sound of myself shuffling papers. So a Democratic congressman this week complained that the U.S. media are telling too much bad news about the post-war situation in Iraq. And because the troops watch CNN, that we were demoralizing our troops as a result and giving, you know the deal, aid and comfort to the enemy. And he said, we may need some Baghdad Bobs, referring to the guy who used to stand, the Sa'af, the information minister for Iraq. There are no Americans near Baghdad, that guy. We may need some of those. That's good. That speaks well for us. Meanwhile, of course, this week, both the UN and the European community scaled down their operations in Iraq, citing media reports. No, not media reports. Citing the actual bad security situation on the ground. Yeah. They're demoralizing us, too. A buried lead. Burying the lead, ladies and gentlemen. This is a good one. This is way at the bottom of a New York Times story about an interesting enough story on its face. A Pentagon official. No, sorry. The Transportation Security Administration, the guys who run the screeners. Rebuffed by JetBlue, which, as you know, apologized for giving its data to a private contractor, which then ended up at the Army, it turns out this week. Surprise. Anyway, the Transportation Security Administration is looking for more information on airline passengers. Hopefully from anyway. So maybe they'll order it. Maybe they'll order the airlines to give it. Maybe they'll ask. But at the very bottom of the story, Admiral James Loy of the Transportation Security Administration said the agency had cut the number of screeners at airports by the equivalent of 6,000 to meet congressional mandates. And here's where the lead gets buried. The creation of the agency, his agency, the Transportation Security Administration, he said, 6 weeks after 9/11, followed a Washington pattern, he said, of, quote, emotional legislation and then sticker shock, unquote. Does that sound like what's going on with Iraq? The Democrats found their voice only when they found the price was too high for the war and the post-war. Oh, this would have been a good $40 billion war, but that's $80 billion. You've got to be kidding. Check eBay, see if we can get the war cheaper. We had great intelligence. Condi Rice and Colin Powell were going on the Sunday Yak shows, making that case over the weekend. And here's Condi on Meet the Press.
We did not have perfect foresight into what we were going to find in Iraq. The fact of the matter is that this deteriorated infrastructure, one that was completely covered and covered over by the gleaming pictures of Baghdad that made it look like a first world city. What we're learning now is that, for instance, the entire country had maybe 55% of the electrical generating power that it needed. But what Saddam Hussein did was to force all of that generating power into the Sunni areas and to simply starve the rest of the country. The country was probably 80% low on the ability to provide sanitation to the
country, is what she was going to say there. So, ladies and gentlemen, here's where it stands. Our intelligence was plenty good enough to find or to know where 2 ounces of VX was hidden before the war. But it wasn't good enough to know that the toilets didn't work outside of Baghdad and that you couldn't plug in an air conditioner. Is that what we're supposed to believe? That we knew all about the weapons, but we didn't know about the... We were told, the United States was told, this entire war could be, the entire post-war could be paid off by the oil revenues. Now, Paul Bremer, head of the... head of Iraq, king of Iraq, says, no, we can't. We can't do that. We can't even make the $20 billion for reconstruction into a loan, which is what Congress wants to do, because Iraq has all this debt that it racked up during the Saddam Hussein era. We didn't know they had debt before the war. Among the $87 billion, a new curriculum for training the Iraqi army, $164 million, 500 experts at $200,000 each to investigate crimes against humanity, a witness protection program for $200,000 per participant, a computer study for the Iraqi Postal Service, $54 million. $100 million to build 7 planned communities with a total of 3,200 houses, roads, elementary school, 2 high schools, a clinic, a place of worship, and a market. $10 million to finance 100 prison building experts for 6 months at $100,000 an expert, 60 garbage trucks at $50,000 each, $900 million to import petroleum products, $20 million for a 4-week business course at $10,000 per student, $400 million to build 2 4,000-bed prisons at $50,000 a bed. You get it. I sound like a right-winger now. Sound like a radio talk show host reading that stuff. Well, somebody did, a couple of emailers sent me information on how Canada became suddenly the source of the second largest petroleum reserves in the world, and I will bring that next week because you deserve to know that, ladies and gentlemen. Here's good news. Britain under Tony Blair has overtaken the United States as the biggest supplier of arms to third world countries. Yeah, we're no longer number one. The amount Britain earns from arms sales now almost matches the annual average of aid to developing countries. by the UK. British arms sales under the Labour government have been greater than under the last Conservative government. The UK is now the second biggest arms supplier in the world. British arms exporters have now focused most of their efforts on selling to the world's poorest countries. That's good target marketing, guys. Despite protestations from Tony Blair that Africa is a scar on the world's conscience, the United Kingdom made $600 million worth of arms sales agreements with African countries between 1999 and 2002. The USA made arms agreements worth only $100 million with African nations during the same period. These details revealed in a U.S. congressional report. That damn Congress, with that bad news, it's demoralizing. It's demoralizing the Africans. At the request of the CIA, the Department of Justice is investigating the White House. You know about this? This is... What is it that's eating its own tail now? At the request of George Tenet, the very loyal CIA director, the Justice Department, headed by the very loyal John Ashcroft, is looking into an allegation that White House officials leaked the name of an undercover CIA officer to as many as six journalists. Her identity was leaked after her husband, former U.S. Ambassador Joseph Wilson, publicly challenged the claim that Iraq had tried to buy uranium ore from Niger. Bush later backed away from the claim. Wilson was sent by the CIA to investigate that claim and debunked it more than a year and a half ago. The intentional disclosure of a covert operative identity is a violation of federal law. Ladies and gentlemen, enough of that. It's time for the apologies of the week. They could eat their own tail in their own time.
We're so sorry.
Dateline Wellington, New Zealand. One of New Zealand's top journalists apologized this week after using a racist epithet to describe UN Secretary General Kofi Annan on his radio program. The remarks on a morning talk show stunned the nation of 4 million, which prides itself on tolerance. They were all the more shocking because they came from Paul Holmes, one of the most respected journalists in the country. In comments about the United Nations, Holmes said, "We are not going to be told how to live by a Ghanaian." He referred to Annan as a darky several times, and at one point called him a cheeky darky. He later apologized in his call-in show and insisted he was not a racist. "I should not have said what I did. It was tongue-in-cheek. It was the shock end of the spectrum. It was a bit mad, probably. I'm sorry if you were upset, and I know some Maori people and Samoan people were upset, and that really upsets me." Dateline Singapore Environment Minister Lin Swee Say apologized for the safety lapses in a laboratory under his charge, which led to a latest case of SARS. "I want to say a big sorry to all the parties involved, not just to our 27-year-old researcher and his family who have gone through this episode, but at the same time to the members of the public as well, because this incident could have been much worse if our researcher turned out to be a super spreader." That's a new characteristic. A Catholic high school in Bismarck, North Dakota. It is North Dakota, isn't it? I get my Dakotas mixed up. I know, and I'm on the air in Dakota, in the Dakotas. I shouldn't admit this. The Catholic high school apologized for a T-shirt featuring an American Indian character after a complaint from United Tribes Technical College. The shirt's logo depicts a male angel gritting his teeth while using a rope to dangle a loincloth-wearing Indian man with a feather in his hair over a pool of sharks. The shirts were created to promote St. Mary Central High School's Friday homecoming game against Mandan High School, whose team is called the Braves. United Tribes Technical College President David Gipp says the message this cartoon says is that Indian people are expendable and not worthy of being treated as human beings, he wrote in a complaint to the school, St. Mary's. St. Mary's Superintendent John Jankowski said he received the letter and spoke with Gipp on the phone. "Our immediate reaction is one of being apologetic," Jankowski said. He said the school didn't mean to offend anyone and planned to work with teachers and students to make sure they understand why the caricature could be offensive to Indians. School officials said they would collect the shirts on Monday, giving students the weekend to wear the shirts. South Korean President No Moo-yeon apologized to the nation for attending a traditional opera during a typhoon that was the strongest in a century, leaving 129 dead or missing. I'm deeply ashamed, Ngo said in a statement. He and his family watched the opera Indeng Su Love Song as it had been arranged by his staff to demonstrate the head of state was interested in culture. Brad Paisley, a disciple of classic country music, who's practically the poster child for the Respect Your Country Elders campaign, offered an apology to some fans who were upset by a comment he made during a live interview on country music television. Speaking of Johnny Cash, he said he had a great life, a long life, and I'm sure he would tell us not to cry for him, and he'd tell everybody out there to vote for people who are still alive in the categories. That's what Johnny would say. No, I'm not kidding. Brad and Cash were both nominated in the categories Music Video of the Year and Single of the Year. He said he meant absolutely no respect, and he saw no reaction at the taping. He got 5 emails at his site later. Johnny Cash's daughter, Kathy, was angered. No one was a bigger Johnny Cash fan than me, he said. I'm sorry if my comment was taken the wrong way. That's kind of an apology. A radio talk show host in Rochester, New York, apologized for an on-air racial slur against the city's black mayor and said he will stay off the air indefinitely and attend diversity training. Will it be held in Hawaii? Because, you know, Rochester is getting cold now. It's getting to be fall. Bob Lonsberry, who was suspended for a week by Wham! Radio, has persistently baited Mayor William Johnson Jr. Last month, Lounsbury joked with listeners about an orangutan that briefly escaped a zoo and then commented the animal was now running for county executive, which is the position the mayor is running for. He made a similar reference again last week as monkey sounds were aired in the background. Lounsbury is white and Republican. He never mentioned the mayor by name. The mayor said he believed Lounsbury deliberately injected race into the campaign. In taped remarks that aired Monday on his show, handled by a guest host, the 44-year-old Lounsbury apologized for, quote, any interpretation of my words which would appear to be racist. He strengthened the apology on Thursday. I sincerely apologize for my offensive comments. I want to personally extend my heartfelt apology to the mayor. I'm sorry for the pain I've caused by any shameful comments. Jamaica's prime minister has apologized for recent comments suggesting efforts by his government have led to greater benefits for citizens, including more girlfriends for men. I meant no offense, P.J. Patterson told reporters. I would like straight up and directly to withdraw that remark. During his apology, he said he was misunderstood and insisted he only meant people were having more personal relationships now without signing any proof. A patient infuriated that he was kept waiting 3 hours for a doctor's appointment has gotten an apology in Las Vegas, said patient Aristoteles Belaviles. I'm happy. That's exactly what I was looking for. Was kept waiting for 3 hours. Alanis Morissette regrets having said thank you, Brazil, at the end of a show in Peru. That's from the Ronald Reagan file of gaffes. And the U.S. Postal Service last week refused to deliver 300 picture postcards and announcements of an upcoming photo exhibition in upstate New York. On the postcards was a painting of two young women seen from behind. Left unclear as whether the women are wearing underwear, bathing suits, or neither. The painting is included in the show the postcards were promoting. The cards were returned to the bulk mailer with a page copied from a post office manual. Highlighted was the definition of lewd or filthy matter. The decision was made by an acting supervisor of business mail entry in Buffalo. He checked with a mailing standards specialist, but should have reported to a direct supervisor. The post office offered an apology. Apparently they realized the women may well have been dressed. European countries this year seized... This is now recent... Hey, we have music for this, I think. Yes, time to get scared, ladies and gentlemen. Ooh.
Let's get scared.
European countries this year seized dozens of tons of farmed salmon from Chile found to be contaminated with malachite green, a fabric dye banned in the United States and suspected of causing cancer. But the United States imports tens thousands of tons of salmon from Chile without testing for malachite green. It's unclear whether salmon tainted with such compounds is entering U.S. markets. However, Canadian inspectors earlier this year found malachite green in smoked salmon they believe was first imported to the United States and packaged here. Costco says it will soon begin screening for the fungicide. Federal officials fear Americans are being exposed to harmful drugs. At least two of the Chilean companies that had tainted salmon seized in Europe also export to the United States. Malachite green breaks down into another compound, which collects in fish tissue. Don't eat that farmed salmon is the lesson, ladies and gentlemen. All right, so we will have more about Iraq moments from now here on the Le Show program. You know, we'll have it right now. I'm just realizing. I'm just reading the clock. But that was nice. That was a nice little musical interlude. So the Congress is worried about the $87 billion. The president went to the UN this week to ask for aid and troops and got neither. Putin came to Camp David, agreed to give neither. And that's where it appears to stand at the moment. The United States needs $87 billion. Congress is balking. The world is balking. Paul Bremer says, without it, the post-war situation will fail. There is, it seems to me, ladies and gentlemen, one other way for the administration to raise the money.
The artists who appear on this program do so through the courtesy of the Department of Homeland Security. Welcome to the first annual George W. Bush-a-thon for Iraq. In the next 87 hours, you'll meet and be urged to enjoy some of the biggest names in government, entertainment, and the punitive arts. Me, I'm Dick Cheney. And now, ladies and gentlemen, the national chairman of the Rebuild Iraq the Right Way Foundation, and just incidentally, the President of the United States, George W. Bush.
Thank you. Thank you. Hey, thank you very much. And welcome to the very first George W. Bush-a-thon. I got to tell you, I wasn't all that enthusiastic about the name for this this telethon with Paul Bremer, Condi Rice, and the other folks at the Rebuild Iraq the Right Way Foundation approached me. But, you know, it's a lot more patriotic than the Howard Dean-a-thon. So let's get started with, wonderful piece of special material that tells you what we're all about. Hit it, Louie. Lyrics written by the great Karen Hughes. Thank you. Without Iraq, you know the tent would have no pole. Without Iraq, the map would spring a hole. The Middle East, oh, would have no heart or soul. Without Iraq, we got to make it a place where each little race can feel right at home. Safe and secure to make us all sure it's not a land where the terrorists roam. The Congress walked. That's why we need your aid. The Frenchmen balked. They're gonna get no motorcade. The tub ain't caulked until the money's paid. So help Iraq, you help Iraq, 'cause we're off track without Iraq. Thank you. Thank you very much. Lyrics by the greatest woman ever to set her thoughts down on a penny, the fabulous Karen Hughes. Now, who's that over on the other side of the stage? Is that Dick Cheney over there?
Hey, yo.
Dick, good to see you.
George, it's good to be seen.
Now, I'm going to embarrass this man for a minute.
Oh, no, this isn't about the women's underwear.
No, this man should be hosting this telethon.
No.
It's true. This man literally reeks with expertise on this whole deal. But, you know, he's got a modesty as big as all outdoors and the kind of humility you could only dream of having. Dick, I'm proud to have you as my sidekick.
Oh, thank you, sir. Pleasure to be along for the ride.
Now, we're going to have some great entertainment to entertain you during the next 87 hours, but we've got an important message to communicate, too. We've got an important job to do and an equally important goal, $1 billion for every hour we're on the air. And we got to make good progress towards that. Now, you know, some people say that's impossible.
Some people do, sir.
But some people probably said it was impossible to transform the Middle East by brute military force, and we've done that.
Yes,
so.
Yes.
So when you see the numbers on your screen, get to your phone, or even better, have your phone close by even before you see the numbers on your screen, so that when you do see them, that's just that much easier to give us a call and to make your contribution. And now give whatever you can afford. And Dick,
we know what you can afford.
There you go. Now our first guest is a true star of many mediums, and he does them all well. And that's so very rare. Hey, that's pretty cute. Let's remember to use that again. Ladies and gentlemen, I've known him since he stayed in my dad's Lincoln bedroom, and we're still waiting for him to bring the pillow shams back. Mr. Rush Limbaugh.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much, folks. You know, this cause, this mission to destroy chaos, the dreaded killer of Middle East transformation, is so transcendently important that only the most whacked-out environ-Nazi feminutsos won't want to join in. Just so you know what I mean, I have here a small list of people who won't be contributing to this telethon.
It's a small list?
Yes, sir. Bill Clinton, who said, "Lord, I've got more sinks to have any more chicks." He's not going to be contributing to this telethon. James Carville, who said, "Mary Madeline, I thought you were Mary Magdalene." He's not going to be contributing to this telethon. Hillary Clinton, who said to Vince Foster, "If you've got a headache, baby, just take all the pills." She's not going to be contributing to this telethon. And finally, Howard Dean, if he's the doctor, I'd rather have the disease. He won't be contributing to this telephone. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Now, isn't he something?
One of a kind, sir.
Yeah. Broke his own mold.
George, before we go any further.
Oh, not a timpani already.
No, sir, not yet. But I would like you to meet one of the corporate sponsors of the foundation and a good friend of all of ours. Meet the international vice president of the Halliburton Company, Mr. Robert Pete Saxby.
What's he mean, meet you? You're over for dinner,
George, it's an honor to be part of this soon-to-be annual event. Over the years, the people of Halliburton, including our good friend Dick over there, have always been there for you. It's been a wonderful and mutually rewarding relationship, especially for us. And tonight is no exception. We're here for you in a big way. So, George, please accept this first check of the many we're going to be bringing you throughout this telethon. A check for $500,000. Here you go.
Yeah, Pete, this is why I say my Halliburton people are the pussycat people of the world. Dick, am I tearing up?
No, sir, not yet.
Good, because this is like from I can't believe it land. You know, if I didn't know I'd stop drinking, I'd swear I was sizzled right now. Pete, thank you from the bottom and the top of my heart.
Well, George, we'll be back with more good news in the hours to come. Thank you.
Pete Saxby. I call him Saxy.
Just as long as you don't call him sexy.
Hey,
but
wait.
Now, timpani.
No, already?
Roll it.
Ah.
$500,000.
Yes. Halfway to the goal of our first hour, and this is only our first hour, so that works out great. Dick, you got something else for me, or am I reading the prompter wrong again?
Something very special, George. Mm. Live via satellite from Sacramento, California, Mr. Arnold Schwarzenegger.
All right. All right. Yeah.
Hello, George. Hello, Dick.
Hey, big fella. I am humiliated with gratitude that you can make time to be with us here tonight.
Well, George, I know better than anyone except the people who advise me that if we can just rebuild Iraq the right way, then that will mean that down the line, we can rebuild our own country the right way. And there's your hope right there.
Yeah. Couldn't have said it better if I'd said it better myself. Hey, Arnold, by the way, what are you doing in Sacramento?
Studying.
Mm. The issues?
The layout. Mm. But, George, I've got a song about you and the whole Rebuild Iraq family.
Really?
You know, it's kind of unusual because I'm here and the Louis Freed Junior Orchestra is down there in L.A.
Wow, is this going to work?
Oh, sure. I've been phoning it in for years. Here we go. There's Colin's wily stare and Condi's perky hair, but what makes gray skies fair? It's Ashcroft. Don Rumsfeld's deep intensity gives me a strong propensity to see my own immensity pale. But it's Ashcroft, that crafty Ashcroft, and I know he knows what to do. When evildoers come and go, his heart says be a dynamo, just ship them to Guantanamo jail. We're on the winning track, just trying to rebuild Iraq. But what gets us in the black is you. Is you. Is you. Is you. Please call. Please give. Thank you. Thank you. Good night.
Take care, Arnold.
Arnold Schwarzenegger. Mm. He didn't have to do that.
Well,
he did, but he made it look like he didn't have to.
George, an old friend, the woman who puts the cure back in national security, Condi Rice.
Hey, Condi. Hi. How you doing, darling?
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Hey, Condi. Haven't seen you since this morning.
No, we've both been very busy since then.
Mm-hmm.
You with the country and me rehearsing for this show.
Rehearsing? Oh, that's right. You've got a dramatic reading for us that you wrote yourself. So I guess this is a dramatic writing, too.
Mm-hmm.
Louis, that's a cue type deal.
I am Iraqi chaos, and I hate freedom. I cut the fiber optic lines that enable Baghdadis to call each other up and say hello, and that makes me laugh. I blow up the sewer lines so the people in Basra have to drink their own waste, and that makes me smile. I sabotage the electric generators so people in Mosul swelter in the dark, and an amused twinkle lights up my eyes. Oh, you could stop me if you wanted to, if you dared to call up and give George Bush the billions he's trying to raise on this telethon. But I don't think you will. I think you're too smug and happy and easily distracted by Democrats to finish the job you started. So I'll keep on smiling, because I am Iraqi chaos, and I hate freedom. So call now. Thank you.
My, my, my. Condi Rice, you are too good to live on the same planet with us.
Well, thanks, George. And in my capacity as a former board member of Chevron Texaco, I'd like to present you with this check for $2 million.
Look at this.
Wow.
Look at
that
this.
That reminds me, George.
Yeah.
Timpani. $2,500,000.
Oh!
Condit, thank you so much. And let me just make one thing as clear as a whistle to everybody. These numbers you see up here on the tote board do include the contributions of our corporate sponsors because they write the contributions off their taxes, so you end up paying for it anyway, and God bless you for it. Dick?
There's so much more Bushathon still in store. Coming up in the next hour, Ricky Martin, Dennis Miller, and the Ahmed Chalabi Dancers. We won't want you to miss a minute of it, so stay right there.
And ladies and gentlemen, just one more reason to be afraid. Indigestion pills such as Zantac are contributing to the sharp rise in the number of people suffering from food allergies, according to a study from Austrian academics. The research indicates that acid-reducing treatments allow food which has only been partially digested to enter the digestive system. Have a nice meal. Ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude... That's going to conclude this week's edition of Le Show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations, over NPR worldwide throughout Europe on the USEN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network, across the east coast of North America, up and down via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet, 7.415 megahertz, across the vast sweep of North America via Sirius satellite radio, and around the globe, it is a globe, you know, via the internet at two locations, on your computer whenever you want it, at harryshearer.com or kcrw.com. And it would be just like food getting into your system fully digested, if you'd agree to join with me then, would you? All righty, thank you very much, huh? The email address for this broadcast is lemail, L-E-M-A-I-L, at interworld.net. Le Show Internet Services by Steve Mack. Playlists for most of the show broadcasts are available at harryshearer.com. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless.